Today is October 24th, 2013, and we are going to conclude some of the ideas that we are discussing that pertain to, actually we're not concluding, we're going to discuss the mitzvah of not eating chametz. We just concluded the mitzvah of redeeming the firstborn animals. And we're on to mitzvah 19, which we began last time towards the end of this year. And basically, the mitzvah is really a mitzvah that we discussed at length in the past. Certain mitzvahs in the Torah we find are repeated with different variations, teaching us different things, different nuances. And often the commentators mention that the reason why the mitzvah is repeated is to emphasize the importance of the idea. The mitzvah of Mitzrayim, remembering Mitzrayim, remembering the exodus from Mitzrayim, remembering not to eat chametz, remembering to eat matzah balls on Pesach. Well, it's not mandated. Not one of the 613. That is, in fact, one of the mitzvahs that shows up most often. And that's because, if not, it might be just most often. And in fact, we mention this very, very often in our Kiddush, our davening, Zecher Liyetzias Mitzrayim, that many of the mitzvahs in the Torah, even though we may not be able to see a direct connection, is related to remembering the exodus from Mitzrayim. We discussed at length in the past the mitzvah of not eating chametz. We discuss, and that comes in different forms. Positive commandment to eat matzah, negative commandment don't eat chametz, and so on. Remembering Mitzrayim, all these sort of mitzvos come in many different shapes. We've dealt with at length the many different obligations regarding the obligations and prohibitions regarding the Pesach offering, which we ate on the night of the first night of Pesach. We dealt with that at length, and we even dealt with specifically not eating chametz. Right at the top of page 35, we have the mitzvah of lo ye'achel chametz, you shall not eat chametz, and then it's repeated in a similar vein in Devarim. It says, le'seichel alof chametz, do not eat chametz for 7 days, and so on. There's one piece here that I wanted to go through from the Sefer Noyam HaMitzvahs, the pleasantness of the mitzvahs. I mean, the purpose of this shiur is to focus on the reasons behind mitzvahs, not so much the technical details and the requirements, but some of the flavor of the mitzvah, some of the reason behind the mitzvah. So here he has an interesting perspective on this prohibition of eating chametz, and one of the lessons, or some of the lessons that teaches us, and that's something that we didn't cover until now, so I put that here, and we shall, Bez Hashem, move on to the subsequent mitzvahs shortly. But let's just see this piece here. It's that big paragraph there on page 35. Again, it's not crucial that you follow inside, because we will translate everything. But if you do find it helpful to follow inside, that's great. So he says like this. Hatam, the reason for this mitzvah of the Torah restricting us from eating chametz on Pesach, which is quite unusual, because you have a prohibition, you have a restriction for 7 days, and then immediately after the 7 days, or in the diaspora, it would take 8 days, it reverts back to being totally permitted, which presents many interesting halachic considerations and differences vis-a-vis foods that are entirely forbidden all the time. But we won't get into those details, but we are focusing on the fact, on the concept, that this is only prohibited for a finite period of time. What is the reason why Hashem, kind of interesting, sort of seemingly trivial, sort of, for 7 days don't eat bread, don't eat leavened products, what's the difference? So he says like this, Zayis yodua, asher chayli ha-nefesh k'may chayli ha-gof. In certain ways, the ailments of the soul are similar to ailments of the body. In what way? Yesh sam hamavas, there is, as far as the physical ailments, there is a poison she'enai charef kol kach, that's not so potent. Ve'enai mazak la'adam im oichol ma'at mimeno. It wouldn't really be harmful to a person if he ate just a minimal amount. We know this with certain medicines. We have a medicine rep here, right? A drug rep. No more?
46 years.
Certain medicines are beneficial to a person in certain ways, but they're also detrimental in others. But if you take them in a small enough quantity, you'll be able to derive the benefit without truly or without totally destroying the person. Of course, certain situations that require more drastic measures and giving a higher dose, more intense therapy, etc. But the idea is that at times the benefit overrides and justifies the detriment. So the same way with a physical ailment, you have the sort, you have poisons, you have things that are toxic to the human body. But if you consume just a small amount, it's not really going to be so detrimental. And there are also poisons that are so toxic that even if you take a trace amount, it could destroy a person. I know the Secret Service in some countries were using some sort of, there was a story in Russia about 7-8 years ago where a fellow, or Europe, they needed to eliminate someone, so they had someone, some agent go in there and engage him in conversation, and they used a poison that was very, very potent, very toxic, and within a couple of days he was dead. So you have certain poisons that are not that are toxic, but not in very small amounts, and certain poisons that are so toxic that even the smallest amount is very detrimental, and that could kill a person in a short period of time. So kimei kein b'chalei nefesh, the same way with the soul. If you have diseases of the soul, what does that mean? We find that there are foods that have a detrimental effect on our neshama, on our soul. We know that machalas aser, the foods that the Torah prohibits all year round, okay? But it's not detrimental enough to the soul, like, it's not as detrimental like chametz is on Pesach. How do we know that? Because if you look at the finer details of the halacha, on Pesach, one is prohibited by the Torah to eat even a crumb of chametz. That's why we're so careful. We kosher the whole home, we cover everything, we have new utensils, or we kosher them. We're exceedingly careful when it comes to, when it comes to Pesach, when it comes to preparing our food. And chametz is aser b'masha. We know it's forbidden to eat even in the smallest amount. But there are other prohibited foods that are forbidden during the rest of the year that we have ideas like it could become bottle, it could become nullified in 60 or in larger quantities, or we have these sort of concepts. What's the idea? The idea is that in as much as this is detrimental to our soul, how and why, we don't necessarily know. But the Torah is telling us that those other foods are detrimental to our soul in a way that it's like a poison, and consuming enough of a quantity of it, it will be very detrimental to us. But in a trace amount, or in a situation where it can be nullified, it's okay. When it comes to chametz is something that for this period of time, this finite period of time, granted, but the chametz is something that is so powerful, so detrimental to us during this period of time of Pesach, that the Torah prohibits even a crumb, even a mashu. The Isser chametz, he says, the prohibition of chametz includes in it all the 365 negative commandments. And why is this? Why is it that the chametz is so detrimental to us that we can't even eat a trace amount? And really we have to ask ourselves, if in fact the chametz is so detrimental to us that we can't even eat a minimal amount, why does it then become permitted the rest of the year? So we've discussed this partially in the past. The chametz is symbolic of, representative of, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. In what way is the chametz representative of the evil inclination? Anybody can help us with that?
Because
Yes.
It's a sense of pride. First of all, it rises, and it's like man's pride. You know, you shall eat the bread by the sweat of your brow, and a person could be real proud. Bread, it's also considered dough. If there's something about it, it rises. The idea of it rising.
Considered dough? Okay, money is the root of all evil. Breadwinner, breadwinner. Okay, so there are many ideas that we mentioned. One of them, one of my favorites, is the fact that the Gemara tells us, how does the Yetzer Hara actually entice somebody to do an aver? If you know deep inside that this opportunity presented to you right now is something that you're going to regret engaging in. Suppose it's you have a nice piece of cream cake in front of you. You know it's not good for you. How does, time and again, how do you fall into the trap of doing something that's detrimental for you? Not only it's detrimental for you, you're going to regret it. You're going to get on the scale the next day and you're going to be upset that you did that. So how is it possible that time and again and again and again, you'll do the same thing? If you drive over some nails that you see on the road and you get a flat tire, would you do it again? Next time you'd be hyper careful, hypersensitive to not driving in that area where you have these sort of obstacles. So why is it that we do things that inflict guilt, pain, difficulty, inconvenience, whatever you call it, health hazards, time and again we do that. How's that?
Rabbi Tatz gives a good answer. He says, you know, a person with a smoker, he can stop 15 times a day, but his cravings are much more powerful than any idea, any knowledge. I have to get to the root, to the ratzon.
How? I'm asking, how is it that the Yetzer manages to allow our cravings to become more powerful for the next cigarette?
The power of,
why is that more powerful than the knowledge that we're going to regret it? I mean, it's a vicious cycle for smokers, right? They smoke, and then they start having these coughs and wheezing and all, and they swear they're never going to do it again. And then 15 minutes later, they have a temptation, and they do it again. Well, how is it that the Yetzer Hara allows you to quickly forget your resolution? And you're going to feel the physical pain. You're going to feel bad. Emotionally, so, and then over and over and over again. How does he manage to do that? So the Gemara tells us, Ein Adam Chayte Ela Imke Nichnas by Ruach Shtos. A person does not transgress unless an air of foolishness enters him. What does that mean? The Yetzer Hara, we're complex. As human beings, we're complex. We're comprised of many different components. He has the ability in our minds to compartmentalize. You know, there's the area in our brain that we could actually feel the pain and know and anticipate pain and difficulty and challenge and disappointment. And then there's the area in our brain where we feel the desire for something, the lust for something. The Yetzer Hara allows a person, just like a fool. A fool doesn't think about the consequences. He dismisses it from his mind. The Yetzer Hara's tactic is to numb that area that we feel, that we anticipate, the knowledge that we're going to regret it, and the reminder of the past times when we regretted it, 1,500 times in the last 60 days, right? And we don't focus on it. Ignore it. Out of sight, out of mind. Let's not think about it. Let's focus on the now. Let's focus on the temptation. If only I had that cigarette. Right? So a person doesn't sin unless there's a, right? So he distorts things. He takes something he glorifies things. Takes something that's really essentially bad and he dresses it up. Yes? Yetzer Hara is also compared to hair. You ever see that kid's toy, you know, where they have different hairstyles that you could dress up my kids used to have like a potato, you know, like a potato man, right? You dress it up with different hairstyles and it's cute, yeah. It sort of dresses things up and it makes it into something that it is. What is hair? Hair is nothing. But if you dress it up in different ways, it has the appearance, right, on the exterior as something different, right? So, sort of puffing things up. That's really what the Yetzer Hara does. It takes something that really is nothing. It's flat. It's useless. It's detrimental. And he makes it seem like something very enticing. Yes?
If you are physically addicted,
True, but so is coughing. Could be even more painful. My point is, in any other area of life, you may be a very disciplined person. That even though it may mean going through, let's say you may be a person who exercises. Going through exercise is painful. But so is not going through exercise. Right? Eventually, right? It's in different ways. If you're a person that's disciplined enough to go through the, do the physical exercise so that, you know, you understand this concept of no pain, no gain. You understand that. So while it's true that the withdrawal is painful, but so is in continuing to engage in this activity. So how is it? My question is only, how is it that the Yetzer Hara succeeds in getting us to...
When you smoke, you're putting it off for the future. You know, someday, maybe 40 years from now, or 30, whatever it is.
But for some, it's actually 10 minutes until they start coughing again.
No, if you don't smoke, it's right. Then, you start going into withdrawal right away. Not physical.
Yeah, but there are people who go through pain almost immediately from smoking as well. I'm just saying you have situations where people in other areas faced with the same degree of dilemma would be disciplined enough to go through difficulty presently, a minor or relatively minor difficulty in order to save greater difficulty in the future. And yet, when it comes to certain sins, every person with their own challenge, right? They don't do that. And that's because the Yetzer Hara allows us to forget, to push it off, to dismiss it. Even if it's almost immediate, he's not going to think about it. If you look at dough, that's really dough. Dough is the same. Bread is the same way. It's a dough. It's flat. It's essentially the same thing after it rises. It's just air in the... Okay, it's a little easier to digest, a little easier to chew, etc. But the fact is, the bread is comprised of the same ingredients as the dough. So basically, why does it become more palatable to us? Why does it become more appealing to us? Because it rises up. It's being dressed up. Now, it's not a perfect analogy, but very close. So chametz is really the deception. It's a symbol of deception to a certain degree. Now, sometimes deception is very important, like sweetening Tylenol. You give it to a kid, he needs to take it, it's bitter. Sometimes it's extremely apparent. In fact, even clothing, malbushei kavod, that's clothing is the, it could be a display of honor for a person. What is it called in Hebrew? Beged. I believe Rav Hirsch says about the word beged is like to betray. Bogad, right? Is to betray. Because clothing betrays, I mean, the purpose is to cover over, and that's the honor of the person, to make a person look respectable, distinguished, etc. In a certain sense, deception is necessary in life, in a healthy dose. But when it's used to get a person to sin, it's a terrible thing. So what he's saying is that the Yetzer Hara, leavened, the leavening agents, the bread, the Yetzer Hara is symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. And the Yetzer Hara is that which entices a person, asher meisis la'adam l'chol averus. I'm in the fourth line. The ruach hatuma shayra lav ma'id. And therefore, to a certain degree, the air of tumah, of ritual uncleanliness, rests on leavened products to a certain degree during Pesach, during this time that we need this lesson. And therefore, it's so potent, it's so detrimental to a person, it's like a poison that even a minimal amount, a trace amount, is dangerous. Now, the fact that it's got this contrast where as soon as Pesach is over, it becomes entirely permitted, that's unusual. He says, Ubo ha-kosev l'rameis al-kal Yisrael. With that aspect, the Torah is coming to symbolize to Klal Yisrael sheyatzu oz mimitzrayim, that at the time that we left Egypt, it was also that sort of thing. We were in the deepest depths of sin. In fact, what happened? Ki kemaya chametz asher bepesach ubekaris, just like chametz, we know that during the 7 days of Pesach is the harshest of punishment for eating it. It's karis. Veruach hatuma asher lo ma'id, and it's terribly detrimental to your soul. And despite this, takeif immediately. As soon as the days of Pesach are over, it becomes entirely permitted. Why? K'maykein hu b'dimyan ha'uma Yisraelis. This is a reflection of what of the experience that we as Jews went through in Mitzrayim. Sha'af al pishayu shakuim b'memtes sharitum. Even though we were on the 49th level of spiritual impurity, the 50th is the bottom. We were right almost at the point of no return or no release. Mikol makayim. Despite that, he gilul l'raima ma'ala. In a very short period of time, we rose up to a very high level, atchekimul atarik desha, till the point where we received the Torah. A mere 50, 51 days later, we received the Torah, which we know was the pinnacle of greatness for the Jewish people in our entire history, the greatest generation and the greatest heights that generation reached was receiving the Torah. We went from the lowest to the highest in such a short period of time. We received the Torah, asher l'kdushas ein cheker. There's no end to the greatness and the holiness of the Torah. How does the Torah describe this fantastic journey out of Mitzrayim, where we were elevated from the lowest level to the highest level possible for humans? How does the Torah describe it? Interesting. The Torah calls it traveling on the wings of eagles. Ve'esa eschem al kanfei nesharim. Or actually, Neil is going to take me to task here. Is it an eagle?
Some say it's a griffin vulture, but that's
okay. Some say it's a vulture. Okay. We won't.
Yeah,
what's
lot,
that?
A lot of them written on it. A lot of them.
Okay. So, it's either an eagle, a vulture, whatever it is. It's a very, very fast bird. So I carried you on eagle's wings or on vulture's wings. V'avi eschem eloi, and I will bring you to me, which means it's a description of bringing us to him to the highest levels. Kolaymer, haitzesi eschem mitachtis madrega atuma. I took you out of the lowest level of tuma, of ritual impurity. V'avi, a spiritual impurity. V'avi eschem eloi, and I brought you to me. Ad roish milas hakedusha, to the highest possible. But chish maher, faster than the speed of light. 50 days. And in fact, we know that we count the 50 days. That's the Sfiras Omer, right? We count the 50 days till this very day. The rabbis tell us that this is each day should be counted as a way to rise up one level. And until perfect our midos until the point that we actually merit to receive the Torah. And we traveled so fast, kimo al kanfei nesharim. I never heard this explanation, by the way, till now, when I saw this a few days ago or last week, that the expression of on eagle's wings or vulture's wings was a description of how fast we went. We know the famous Rashi quotes the Chazal that one of the reasons why Hashem used the example of an eagle is because, or a vulture, is because, let's use eagle for argument's sake, knowing that there's, right, is because these birds fly at the highest altitude of all birds.
Yes?
That's maybe one of the reasons why they say it's a vulture, right?
Protect their young.
Why do they do that?
Carry the young on top of their wings.
They carry their young on top of their wings. Why? Birds that fly at a lower altitude, who do they have to fear? The vulture or the eagle. So where do they carry their children? Underneath their wings. Like a jet engine, right? But the vulture, because it flies at the highest altitude, it actually carries its young on its wings. Because the only thing that it has to fear is what? An arrow being shot from below. And it says in a expression of self-sacrifice, it says better the arrow, if there is an arrow that makes a direct hit, better it should go into me than it should hurt my children. That's the selflessness of the vulture. And the same is the way Hashem treated us. It was an act of love. Not that he feels any pain and could be destroyed by an arrow, Chas v'Shalom. But when he led us through the desert, he surrounded us in the ultimate, the epitome of being protected by Hashem, and we really look forward in the future to a similar situation. But he protected us by the clouds of glory. And we know, the rabbis tell us, that any weapons, any missiles, arrows, whatever were thrown at us, the clouds acted as not just a shield, but it actually was converted it into a boomerang and would cause, it would actually, catch it and send it back. This is all miraculous, obviously, but it would cause it to turn around and go back to the one that shot it and kill them. So this is a form of protection, a show of love that Hashem has to us, that if we're living on such a high level of spirituality, if we're willing to commit ourselves to that, that Hashem will take care of us in that way, and we could really merit His protection at any time for this. But this is really the example that Hashem uses, is the nesher, is the vulture, because the vulture similarly expresses itself in that same way by putting its children on top of its wings. I just want to add, so that's the typical interpretation, the more common interpretation, but here he's interpreting as the vulture as an expression of speed and how fast we went from one madrega, from one level to the other. And possibly the vulture also, its speed, it uses its speed not just to go forward, but probably rising up as well, which would be really analogous to what we're talking about. Reb Matisyahu Solomon, whenever referring to this pasuk, he says an interesting thing from Reb Hirsch. Reb Hirsch describes the protection of Hashem and leaving Mitzrayim. He says there's a hidden message here when Hashem refers to the eagle, and the message is the following. While it's true that flying on the wings of the mother bird is something very comforting and protects us, etc., but there's one action that the children have to do in order to enjoy that freedom and that protection. And what's that?
Hold on real tight.
But before holding on real tight, it's true. There's another action before holding on real tight. They actually have to exert themselves by jumping onto the wings of the mother. The other birds may take their children in their claws or in their feet. The vulture, while it's true that they enjoy a special protection, but they have to jump on the bird, on the wings, on the bandwagon.
Right.
And that's the message that Hashem is sending us with this. You want my protection? You want to fly with me? You want to soar? You want to be elevated? You want to be protected? It's all wonderful. You got to jump on. And that's what Chazal say. As soon as a person exerts himself and pushes themselves a little bit, and it's not just a one-time thing, it's in any project, in any goal that you want to achieve, you have to exert yourself. But as soon as you do put in a significant exertion, a significant amount of work, Hashem says, I'll take care of the rest. And we find this in our own daily lives. We find this in many, many different areas. If you don't, it's like that guy who was kept on davening to Hashem that he should win the lottery. You know that story?
Yeah.
He's davening for tens of years. He's davening he should win the lottery. Finally, one day, there's a heavenly voice that comes out after like 40 years. Says, my son, go buy a ticket. Right? If you don't jump on, right, you got to do your part. Exert yourself, show Hashem that you're serious, and then He'll take care of the rest. All right, I think we'll stop here.
That's a good message.
And Bez Hashem next week.
So the message is that during Passover, jump on, don't eat bread.
That's a very basic. No, the idea here, maybe we didn't conclude
tie it
this. You're right, you didn't tie it together, so you're right, we should conclude that. The message is that you have the ability, we all have the ability to rise up, to lift ourselves out from the abyss, from the lowest of the low, and rise up many, many levels at a terrific speed, similar to that of a vulture or an eagle, and rise up spiritually and come closer to the Rebbeinu Shlom and grow in a phenomenal way, in an exponential way, beyond our greatest dreams. We have the ability to do that so long as we exert ourselves. We push ourselves initially, we jump on and we commit ourselves to serving him. Here, this is what Hashem is telling us by not eating chametz. Chametz is that same thing. We have 7 days where it's symbolic of the Yetzer Hara and it's horrible. What Hashem can do is in one moment convert that now it's permitted. What are we saying? It's a tactic, it's an approach to the Yetzer Hara. It's teaching us, chametz is symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. You can conquer the Yetzer Hara in a very short period of time. Even, don't give up hope if you're at the lowest level. Because Hashem, in a very short period of time, as long as you push yourself to some degree initially, habola taher misayana, you say, a person comes, he wants to purify himself, they'll help him, but he has to take the first step. He's got to buy the ticket. You buy the ticket, you exert yourself, then you can win the lottery.